Okay, let's start. Welcome to Angel Swing Chat number 30. That's crazy how time flies. And today we are back with Swombat, one of our favorite guests, third time. So happy to have you back. But for anyone who haven't heard the previous episodes, is an entrepreneur, serial startup founder, and Web3 expert. And we agreed not to use the NFT market expert term.
Web3 expert is equally objectionable, I think. I don't think there is such a thing as a Web3. I mean, maybe we're all Web3 experts that have been hanging out here for a year.
Okay.
It's like when you're dealing with bleeding edge stuff that's just still being developed. I think anybody calling themselves an expert is a little bit excessive. We're all just Web3 trying to figure out what the hell is going on.
Yeah, no, that's true. But we're figuring out together. That's the important part. Today we have several topics lined up, and there's so much stuff happening in Web3. So we thought we should go through some of that and talk a bit about project analysis, how to figure out if a project is a good project overall. And overall means not necessarily investment advice. We don't do that. This is just for informational purposes only. And then we also want to talk a bit about Reddit avatars. So that's coming up. And other topics, so stay tuned for that. But first, wanted also to give my lovely co-hosts a chance to say hello, like Johannes and June.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Hi, Daniel. Quick question. Can you explain to us how you came up with the Swombat name? Remember, I was Googling for your YouTube channel, and the only thing that came up was wombats, like videos of these cute animals from Australia.
It's not a very interesting story. I had a different nickname. I used to take nicknames from computer games that I played, and a nickname that I used for 10 years or something was K-Dan, which was like, from total knowledge, and there was this thing called K-Bots, and so I was K-Dan game. And at some point I realized, why the hell am I K-Dan? I don't have K anywhere in my name. It doesn't make any sense. It made sense with total knowledge, doesn't make sense after that. So I actually just tried to come up with a new name, and I like wombats. I came up with a few variations on that, and one of them was Swombat, and I was like, oh, that's neat, it's short, it's easy to pronounce, it's unique, there's not a lot of people using that, yeah, let me just use that, and that's it. It's like the most boring nickname story ever.
Oh, it's not boring, that's great. I somehow figured out that you must like wombat.
Wombats are pretty damn cool if you think about it. They're pretty mean little buggers, and really tough and really strong, and they poop square cubes as well, which is pretty amazing. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like about wombats.
It's a good name choice.
Thank you. Once I came up with it, I was like, oh yeah, that works. Let's go for that. But no, I didn't grow up with wombats. Maybe I should change the story and just say, I used to have 15 wombats as a child, as animal companions. And so I decided to name myself after the wombats. And they were very speedy, so it was Swombat. There you go.
You have to say you saved them from a fire in the forest, and now they are living in your home.
Yeah, this is even
a better story.
Yeah, except they look more like cats right now. Maybe they were once wombats.
Oh, that's so fun. Okay, thanks. And we also have Rebel here, by the way. Hi, Rebel. I was thinking we could start with one of the topics that you've made videos on recently.
Sure.
And by the way, I have to really emphasize how great these videos are. You're putting out a lot of useful content and so many good topics. Also in this kind of bite-sized format where they're short and efficient. Lots of good talking points there.
There's a lot more coming. Yesterday, I managed to do the shooting for 3 more videos. And I'm editing the footage for a 4th one. So that's 2 weeks worth of 2 per week content sorted. Although one of them would be a repost of the paper analogy one, because by the standard of my recent videos, it's just horrible. I had to re-record it. So yeah, there'll be more coming.
That's cool. And you mentioned also you got new gear as well. You're really diverging from the planned topics here now.
Where did I mention I got new gear?
I don't remember. Did I see it on Twitter? Or
no, he said it last time. He said he's now having better lights and he's going to start a lot of videos.
Yeah, no, the lights was weeks ago. That's when the quality improved amazingly, those in the audience who are photographers will know that lighting is like 90% of the job. I got a decent light and that made a huge difference to my setup. I'm actually getting more gear now, but I'm going to try switching from the Canon camera that I'm using to a Sony ZV-E10, which seems to be better in many ways. We'll see if that makes a difference. Anyway, this just gear addiction.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so much fun.
It's cheaper than most NFTs were last year.
Oh, yep.
Think back to like, these cost half an ETH like this time last year. That was like $2,000. And now I'm like, yeah, camera is way cheaper than that.
Yeah, that reminds me of looking at getting a new MacBook at some point. I remember like a few months ago looking at the prices and was like, oh yeah, that's 0.3 ETH.
I think it's really helpful when looking at any of these projects, and since we're talking about Project Analysis these days, to remember to translate things into real prices, because pricing things in ETH makes it look a little bit like it's Disney bucks or something, some magic internet money that doesn't really count as much. And the reality is it is real money. When you translate it into US dollars and you're like, okay, so I'm going to buy a membership to, okay, let's say I believe that there's value in this membership to this club. Is it really worth tens of thousands of dollars? Like, really? Or I'm getting access to this tool or something. Is that worth $1,000 a month? Really? No, surely not. Translating into dollars in your head is, I think, a good idea. Even counting the sort of one ETH equals one ETH thing, when it's something that you want to use, or when you're trying to figure out how much people will be wanting to pay to use it, translating into dollars makes a lot of sense, I think.
I can confirm this. So we had last time in the Discord a discussion about me having a moonbird for just some hours. And I felt so uncomfortable. I was always here calculating back in dollars or euros. And it was such a horrible time because it was definitely out of my comfort zone to see an NFT going from 2.5 to 10, 15. And I was thinking, I'm going to mess this up. This was definitely some more bucks that I wanted to lose by holding a JPEG. We had this discussion last time. I sold it. I sold it for 15 ETH in the beginning. I was disappointed 3 days or 4 days later when it went to 20 and then 40.
Very smart flip, holding an asset worth 15 ETH, which at the time was like, what, about $2,000, I think? So $30,000.
Yeah. But then I calculated the market cap. Oh, it's super huge. It can't go higher. And then you sell it and instant regret because then it goes to 40. Of course it goes to 40.
But it could also have gone back down to 2.
Of course.
You didn't know that. And you made a good decision. You can, as I say, you can never go broke taking profits.
Yeah. I also realized that I can gamble with shitcoins all day long. It makes even fun because I'm just investing a fraction of that amount. Okay, if I'm going to lose $200, who cares? Not that much. If I'm going to lose 10 ETH or 2.5 is even too much for me to just lose. That's one big problem, that these NFTs are not fungible. You can't divide it to smaller parts.
Yeah, and in terms of the risk, like I think that's one of the things that I tend to try to repeat about blue chips, with which some people think are the safe place to put money. I find them insanely risky because the risk concentration to have one item that's so expensive is just ridiculous. Anything that would cause substantial amounts of money in, I bought at somewhere around 0.1 or 0.2 ETH. And then I bought a bunch of those and it might go down and my entire investment might disappear. But the maximum that I've put into a single project is 2 or 3 ETH. And some of those will do really well. If just one of those projects does really well, I'll have likely covered the losses from the others, even if all the others just tank. I'm not so stressed about any single one of those projects, because the maximum I can lose is a couple of ETH. And that sucks. I don't want to lose a couple of ETH. It's a lot better than losing. Imagine if you bought an ape at 110 ETH at the peak in January or something. Jesus.
And then you connect to a website to dress your ape. And no, the ape is gone.
Oh my God. I think at this point, if you do, that's on you. I hate to be unsympathetic to people who lose their assets. But if you have an asset worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, first of all, it should be on at least a ledger, if not a multisig. And secondly, you don't want to segregate that stuff. If you really want to go and click and FOMO on random shit, then fine, but do it on a wallet that doesn't contain all your assets. I don't think it's victim blaming to say that if you're being that insecure, it's not so much you're asking for it, but it's just reckless. It would be like going and getting drunk in the town while carrying 5 suitcases full of cash. Okay, you can do that. Probably that's not going to end well. Maybe you should leave the suitcase of cash at home or in a bank.
And now imagine all these ape holders are going to a New York event and everybody knows that this guy is holding an ape. At least from a security standpoint, it's not a good idea to identify yourself as somebody holding an ape. But this is the only option to go into this location. If now some bandits come into the building and say, give me your phone, they would be super rich. I'm wondering why nothing happens.
I would hope that none of those people are actually carrying the ape in a hot wallet that's on their phone, that can authorize transfers on their phone.
Of course, they do. Well, but even then, they say, we will beat you until you show us your computer, right?
Yeah, but there's a kind of how hard do you end up making it? You said, what if they walk into this party where there's 50 people who hold apes? If they can just force them one by one to transfer all their apes out and get the job done in 2 hours and just leave, that's one level of theft. If they have to, for each person, like torture them for hours and get them to go back home and dig up their private key and convince their friend who has the multisig to also approve it, that's not very scalable as a way to steal stuff. So you want to make it hard, like not just carry it in your wallet, but like a briefcase full of cash.
We have a great Halloween theme now. How to rob ape holders. But I think Espresso was not so happy about sticking to the topic, right?
No, this is great. I think operational security is a really important topic overall.
And the thing with operational security is the only thing you need to do to be safe with your NFTs, if you're like Punk659 and you're holding millions of dollars worth of assets and building a museum and doing a kind of 30-year or more project out of it, that's a different thing, because there you might be targeted by people willing to put extreme amounts of effort into stealing your stuff. Like there was a story that came out of some guy who was running, I think, a coin or something. He was a founder of some kind of crypto project, and somebody made up a whole fake company and pretended to do a deal with him to try and hack into his wallet, build a custom smart contract that was designed to try and drain his wallet. That's a different level of security if you're at that level. But for most people, all you have to do is just be 10 times more paranoid than you think you should be. Like every time somebody asks you to do anything with your wallet, just assume that the other person is trying to rip you off, is some kind of hacker trying to rip you off, and just take action that cannot rip you off no matter what you do, like whether it's impossible for them to actually rip you off. If you approve something with a wallet that contains nothing, they can't steal your apes in your other wallet. Be 10 times more paranoid.
Yeah, that's really good advice. I think the challenge we're facing here in Web3 is that this is new to many people. There are so many safety nets in other parts of society, like money in your bank. If you fall for a scam, you can usually get covered by a bank security fund or a government fund in many countries. If you call one of these crazy expensive foreign phone numbers for some of those scams, the phone company will refund you and waive the bill. There's all kinds of things that make it less important in before this point where we are really in custody of our own assets 100%.
And even if you die, if my grandma, I hope this never happens, but if she's going to die, then we will get the funds because there are legal rights how to transfer assets to your relatives. But you don't tell anybody your key. What happens if I'm going to die? I can explain my wife what is the seat and where she could find it, but I'm not really sure if this will work out. And maybe some people don't trust their wife and then the funds are gone and your child can't afford the college, for example.
Yeah, it's a tricky topic. And yeah, that's actually something we can follow up in a later space as well, more operational security topics. To transition back to the schedule. So we were talking about how to assess projects, so NFT projects. This is something that you, Daniel, have put out a lot of great content on YouTube. So everyone go subscribe to the channel. There are topics like how to spot empty projects and how to assess the value of projects. So why don't you give us a summary of how should we spot empty projects?
Probably the best way is to watch the video and get the tips that I have in the video. Do you have specific questions about the topic?
We need the very short introduction. So what is an empty project?
Empty projects is one where they're basically not building anything. They might appear to be very active and doing lots of stuff, and they're working hard and tweeting all the time, but they're not actually building anything. If they're not building anything, if they're just building hype and there's never anything other than hype, eventually that has to run out. Those who have been around for a bit will have encountered this term of vaporware, which used to be quite common back in the 90s. I haven't heard it so much recently, where it was a piece of software that the release date would keep being pushed back further and further. Half-Life 3 and Duke Nukem were great examples of that, where
it never actually gets released, those projects can suck up enormous amounts of fun while they're pretending to be doing something. Now, in the case of Vaporware, or at least in the case of something like Duke Nukem, I imagine that they were actually trying to build it. It was politically very difficult to actually get it done internally for the company. But basically, in the NFT space, the concept of Vaporware has found a new playground where there's a lot of projects where they're just going to keep hyping up the thing that they're going to be building and the promises and how amazing it's going to be and the metaverse and all those amazing things you're going to be able to do and how this community is the strongest and this and that and whatever. And actually, when you dig into it, they're not actually building anything. You can basically figure that out by looking for the product that they're building. In many cases, you won't find a product, and that's a pretty good hint that the project is empty. In some cases, you'll get some sort of mirages that are being presented as if they were a product. The three that I mentioned in the video are a community, which a community is not a product. A community can be a thing that can accrue around a certain topic and shared interest. It can be a thing that can help power up the marketing for a product, but it's not a product itself. Clubs being an exception, but I think most of them are not that well implemented yet. The second one I listed was we're building culture. I think the third one was Global IP Project, wasn't it? Global IP brand. Yeah, where it's, my view is that brand follows products. Great brands usually follow some kind of great products, whether that's entertainment brands or product brands or any of those kind of things. First, there's a kind of great product that's produced, sold and scaled up, and the brand accrues around that. Trying to go straight to building a great brand without actually having a product, I think is just a kind of fool's gold sort of pitch. It's another sign of a likely empty project. And we're not going to name names, but there's a number of high-profile projects in the space that are just focused on just building a great brand. One thing you'll notice, actually, which I think is quite telling about those, is that they never actually define exactly which brand they're building. They allow everybody to project whatever they dream onto this brand. So it could be Disney or Apple or Louis Vuitton or Supreme or like any kind of random selection. Whatever you're excited about as a brand, they say, yeah, that's what we're building. But they don't go and like clearly define what sort of brand they're building. It's just a great global IP brand that's whatever you want. That's usually a good hint that they're not really building anything.
Thank you. I think I want to dig in a bit on this community aspect, because that's very common in this space, right? A lot of focus on the community. And in many ways, NFT projects have a big benefit over the Kickstarter projects, as you've compared those in the past. Kickstarter projects don't have this kind of community with Discord server and people can chat and build up kind of the anticipation. Usually, what is really the role of the community? How much should a project founder focus on the community versus the product, in your view?
Depends. It's a how long is a piece of string kind of question. It depends on what kind of product you're building. For some products, it doesn't make sense to have a community. For some, it does. If the product is such that it makes sense for people who are using that product to connect with each other and to exchange ideas and make connections, then it can make a lot of sense to build a community around it. And then again, the kind of community you want to build around it will depend on what you want that community to do for you, what you want them to do for each other. It's not a sort of cookie cutter, let's just start a Discord and get people chatting and get them excited and get them to post memes. It really depends on the product. Building a community around your product or around your startup is a great thing to do to amplify certain aspects of your product, to amplify the marketing maybe, or create stronger word of mouth. One of the most common ways that products and startups use communities is by getting them to help each other to reduce the load on their own help desk, for example. That's a totally valid use of a community as well. But that's not what most of those NFT projects are doing. They're sort of presenting that you're going to be part of this community is the product. And I don't think that's a valid product, especially not when most people are in the community because they're waiting for the price to go up so they can sell. Even just the fact that people will leave the community as soon as they sell makes it very shaky and fragile and not likely to be very viable community.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I've also certainly seen some of the projects I've bought NFTs from have that kind of community where when you spend some time in it, you realize there's basically nothing here apart from talking about the NFT collection. And it gets very hollow, very quick.
Yeah, it's typically a community whose unifying purpose is to pump the project so they can sell it to the next round of suckers, basically. Sorry to be really harsh. I know I keep hurting people's bags, as Johannes said in his tweet. I'm just calling it like it is there. I think that's the truth. I've been in a number of those communities. It's not everywhere the case. I definitely see exceptions, but they're the exception rather than the rule. I don't think we've worked out yet how to counteract the fact that when people sell their tokens, they're no longer part of the community. Actually, the ones that have the best communities, in my view, are the ones where the tokens are not linked to being able to be on the Discord. Disclosure, I own some tokens of Zen Academy. I'm not planning to sell them anytime soon, but like their Discord is completely open. Anybody can join and participate. I believe Meta Angels, which I also am a holder of, is also open Discord. There, I can believe that there's a community building because you don't need to be a holder to be there. It doesn't make sense. I'm part of the startup community, for example. That's not represented by a token. It's represented by my experience, my connections, the people that I know, the conversations that I have, the activities that I take part in. That's what makes me part of the startup community or the Web3 community. You don't need to give me a Web3 token to make me part of the Web3 community, if we can define such a thing. I think the tokenization can help align people around an objective, which unfortunately has typically been how do we pump the price? But it can help people align around any objective that you set, the where the NFT is connected to that objective, but it's not itself quite there as a product, and I would be hesitant to buy into that.
Yeah, I think Meta Angels is a great example in this regard, because in many ways the community is the product in that project, because they are focusing on building these network effects, right?
Yeah, but it's a bit of, like, the product is more the once they actually get in place, I'm not sure if it's working yet, but is the processes that they have in place to help take advantage of the people who are holders, take advantage of the network of holders to help each holder benefit from that network. It's a little bit complicated to explain. I think there's still an improvement to be made on the pitch. I get the idea. My wife is a super networker. She knows everybody. When I need something, I ask her, do you know somebody who can do this? And she's like, yeah, I know this person, I can introduce you. And then 3 hours later, I'm having a conversation with the lawyer about this thing that just happened. She introduced me to a lawyer. I live with a super network, so for me, I have access to that anyway. But if I didn't, I would want to have access to a project that gives me that, where I can make a request and say, hey, I need help with this. Can anybody help? And I get a response from that. Like, I get introduced and stuff. I've observed that come out of communities that weren't organized around tokens. Hacker News was a great example. There was a point where one of our employees at Grantree, my third business, she was based in India. There was a really complicated case where her parents were trying to illegally take custody of her and have her arrested and declared mentally incompetent. So it was a very complicated, messy thing. But basically, they bribed the police chief in Delhi and they had her arrested on a Friday evening in another state in India and flown over to Delhi. They had the trial set for Monday morning, where they thought it was all going to be in the bag. We were able to, via Hacker News, go and ask for help from that community. We said, we need a lawyer with a human rights track record. We'll pay them, but we need a lawyer who's able to act right now, because this is happening right now. And by the time she landed in Delhi, we had the lawyer set up and working on the case. By the time the thing happened on Monday, those parents and police didn't know what hit them. Everything was ready. The case got thrown out immediately, and she was fine after that. That was power of community. There were no tokens involved. There was just a community that both me and this other person had participated a lot in that community, so we'd earned a lot of respect. So when we said, hey, can we get some help, please? People stepped up. That happens with or without tokens.
Wow, but that's a powerful story.
Yeah, go back to Meta Angels. I'm hoping that Meta Angels is trying to build that. And if they're building that, I think that's insanely valuable, which is why I've bought a bunch of them.
Disclaimer, we're all big fans of Meta Angels.
For me, it worked out because I have met my other Angels Wing friends. At least the community building for me already worked out. Now I could sell it to somebody else. But I will hold. I'm in the crypto space since 2014. For all the years, I had no community and I was just buying, selling. I had no clue that there's so much more by being in a Discord server with some friends.
Yeah, I think this is actually a good way to transition to our next topic on the agenda, because Reddit has made the headlines lately, and that's a community site with their avatars. I was thinking we could talk a bit about what's happening there and what we think about this move by Reddit. As a summary, in July, they launched their collectible avatars, and they launched them with chain-backed avatars. They are very good at avoiding the term NFT. That's the first learning point there. They avoid it at all costs. And these collectible avatars have been available for a while since July. Reddit also went out and collaborated with I think 30 different artists to create collections, and all of the avatars are based on the iconic Reddit character Snoo and variations on that theme. I think the reason it made headlines this week is that it finally broke through in crypto Twitter. There's been quite a lot of trading and speculation on these avatars, but the underlying concept is really interesting because they have collaborated with Polygon and they actually create a Polygon wallet for every Reddit user. They call it the Reddit Vault, where you store your avatar. The entire checkout and collection process is not related to crypto at all. You pay with credit card, and it was fairly affordable as well, typically starting at $10 for an avatar. Since these are actually blockchain backed, they're possible to trade and use both on Reddit and elsewhere. So I think wanted to start by asking, when did you notice this, Daniel, and what's your kind of initial impression?
Thank you. For me, I think I started hearing about it a couple of weeks ago. One of the first deeper dives I think I did was actually Giancarlo Shaw's video on it. And soon after, some threads started appearing. Before that, I think I had some vague ambient awareness that Reddit had released some kind of avatar thing, but I hadn't really looked into it. So it's them who moved my attention to it. It became fairly obvious to me that this is a very smart thing from Reddit. The kind of thing that we've noticed happening over the last couple of years, right? Where as soon as some kind of new kernel appears where hype can accrete rapidly, people get very excited. They can jump into this and make a lot of money by riding it on the way up. I don't care about that. I'm not trying to trade that. I'm not trying to follow that. I call it hype ambulance chasing. I think ultimately you're just going to get run over at some point if you keep trying to do that. It's also not very additive to the space. I think trading that kind of stuff, for me, doesn't seem very interesting because it's a win-lose kind of game. In order for me to win, it's somebody else to make a really bad trade and lose a lot of money. I don't feel good about making my money that way. That's something that's happening because Reddit is so big and has such a strong narrative. They already have more Polygon wallets set up than there have been OpenSea trading wallets in the last couple of years. And that's trading wallets. That's not people. That's trading wallets. What's Reddit is probably actual people. Those 3 million wallets, they're probably all connected to actual people. Maybe there's a few duplicates here or there, but most people don't have multiple Reddit accounts. I imagine I have 2 wallets on OpenSea. My wife has 2 as well. I think most people have at least 2 wallets on OpenSea. So really the numbers on OpenSea are at most half of what is on the Dune graph. So let's say it's 1 million people, and that's an overestimate probably still. That's been enough to run a lot of Ponzi's over the last couple of years, but it's a very small number in the great scheme of things. Reddit got 3 million people in relatively short time because they have something like 50 million daily active users, 300 million monthly active users, something like that. But that's not the interesting thing. I don't care about the fact that some avatars have gone up to 10 ETH. That's not the interesting thing or the relevant thing there. What's interesting is that they are getting all these millions of people used to owning things online on decentralized rails, Polygon in this case. They're getting them used to the idea of having wallets. One of the really interesting ideas I've heard recently is that we shouldn't try to onboard people to Web3. We should bring Web3 to where people are. And people were on Reddit already, and Reddit brought to them the benefits of Web3 where they are without asking them to stop doing what they're doing and do it differently. All they ask them to do is come up with a seed phrase and make sure to save it, and that's it. Everything else is completely transparent for them. If they want to go and explore further into Web3, they can. The shift that I see happening there is an example of bringing Web3 to where the people are. Much like people have been predicting for the last year or so, those people don't even know that they're using NFTs. They don't care. They're not playing Ponzi games. They're not trying to get rich quick online. They're just using the NFTs because it's fun to go and get an avatar and customize it and collect some traits and have your unique avatar. And they're not trying to make, you know, tens of thousands of dollars overnight by flipping something to some other person who buys it at the top. They're just having fun buying things that cost $5, $10, something like that, and making use of them. And at that price point, that seems like a very reasonable thing to do. Pay $10 and get a customized avatar that looks cool on Reddit. If you're a heavy user of Reddit, definitely that seems like worthwhile. It doesn't need to go up in price. That's not the point. The purpose of NFTs is not to go up in price all the time. It's to be digital property. Some property does go up in price and some property goes down in price and some property stays more or less the same. It's not an inherent characteristic of property that it has to go up in price rapidly. Yeah.
Yeah. Agree. I think, as you mentioned, the point there is that they've onboarded a lot of people, relatively speaking, or lots of people compared to what we're used to, and not primarily traders. I think that's really interesting to see. I also saw a comment Reddit is making the playbook for other tech companies to follow, where they can launch an avatar marketplace. They can make limited edition avatars available. So the prediction was that other companies are going to do the same because it's so obvious that this works.
It is the sensible thing to do. They've shown how it can work. They've shown how it can be done, even when Reddit is one of the most anti-NFT places, because they didn't understand NFTs, because they just saw all the Ponzi's and grifters, and they rightly judged that we don't want any part of that. And then now they got given, hey, here's these NFTs. This is your digital property. It's just an avatar. You can get it for free, or you can buy some special features for it. But the difference is, compared to before, is that now it's yours. Even if Reddit goes down, you still have your avatar. It's yours. And that's really cool. I hope many companies follow that model.
Yeah, I agree. And I also see opportunities for creators here. Reddit still has an open application form for their creator program. So people can apply to make these collections of avatars, even getting a share of royalties down the road. I think they said they have 5% royalty on these collections, and half of it go to the creator and half to Reddit. It seems very interesting, a space where Reddit can partner with other brands to make collections. That's super interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, and I would really encourage people, because we used in the NFT space to effectively see everything through what I would call a Ponzinomics lens, because that's what we've been used to. That's what we think are the normal patterns. And people are saying, oh, that's the way things are done in Web3. I don't think that's the way things are done in Web3 or in NFTs. I think that's just the way we've done things over the last couple of years, because there's been this huge enthusiasm for making money quickly online. In fact, that was inherently unsustainable right from the start. I think it's probably not going to happen again. Probably not. There will be another bubble somewhere else, and people will rush there and try to make money in there as well. But what's more on the cards at this point is this transformation of the world of online activity from one where we don't own anything to one where we do. Some of those things that we own might end up being collector items, but most of them are just going to be just things that you use. Just you have your shirt, you don't buy your shirt because it's going to be a collector item and it's going to be worth $10,000 in a couple of months. You buy your shirt because you want to wear it, and you wear it, and then at some point you decide you don't like it anymore, and then you stop wearing it and you donate it or throw it away or whatever. That's going to be the case with most internet property.
I think that's a good analogy. Usually we buy things to use them. We want the utility of it after its use is discarded. It seems like Web3 has been especially focused on all of the gaming potential, like gaming assets. While that doesn't seem to pan out yet, and this instead swoops in as a big success story, at least this week's a big success story.
I don't know what other people's opinions might be on this, but I'm also somewhat skeptical. People have been pumping this, oh, gaming is the next thing narrative since last year, actually. It still isn't. I'm not convinced that it actually is.
Same for Virtual Land. Before the gaming hype, which never happened, we had seen Second Life clones land, where you are going to buy Virtual Land and nobody's building on top of it.
I'm not sure about that. I'm not going to go and make broad declarations with any kind of certainty. But I think NFTs will have a big part to play in Web3. Even though a lot of people seem to be expecting that, I don't think it's going to be the next place where this whole get-rich-quick-online bubble happens, with or without NFTs. I think the play-to-earn bubble actually played itself out already. People already turned off that model. And World of Warcraft swords or whatever, digital items in RPGs, are not actually a good speculative asset, probably.
So I'm really waiting for the day where I can sell and buy a house via smart contract, because I did this in the real world in the past, and in Germany you pay 15,000, 20,000 euro just so that somebody in a suit is showing you a paper, reading it word by word, and then you sign it.
Yeah. And
wow, so much money goes away. It would be so great if we could use the blockchain for all these standard processes. I'm changing my location. I just want to update my address so that the government can send the papers to the other address.
Yeah, there was another video by Brett that was looking at the adoption of NFT ID cards in South Korea. They did some studies and they reckoned that just switching to NFT-based ID cards would increase their GDP by 3%. South Korea is not a tiny economy. 3% of the GDP of South Korea is a lot. It's like tens of billions of dollars. And that's just from switching their ID cards to NFTs. If you switch the real estate industry to NFTs as well, that's a massive gain. You know, a lot of people joke, yeah, but what about if, you know, your wallet gets hacked while you're sleeping and you lose your house? But that's easily solved. You just make those NFTs much harder to transfer. In the extreme case, you still need the government to approve the transfer before the NFT will switch from one wallet to another. You could do that. You can implement that in NFTs. That would still be a lot cheaper than what we're doing now, because you could attach all the relevant information in digital form to the NFT, have all the verifiable, traceable stuff. Like, half of the job of the lawyer is to make sure that the person who's selling you the house is actually the owner. There's not any kind of extra things on that house, a kind of declaration that the house is unsound in some way or about to be demolished or whatever.
And there's also the option to make non-transferable tokens. So imagine a world where you get your diploma from the university to your wallet and you can never move it, but you can always prove that, yeah, this paper is not lying. So much efficiency in the future. Or you could even do something like the NFT for the house is not transferable, but the government can burn the one token and create another token to a different wallet. So even the hacking thing is not that big issue if you think about it.
I mean, there's all sorts of solutions. Like, ultimately, with physical property, the reality is that the ultimate guarantor of the fact that you can sleep in your house and nobody's going to come in and kick you out of your house is the government with their monopoly on lawful use of violence. So the government is going to be involved in some way to keeping your house yours. They could be involved in the transfer or in issuing the NFTs or whatever. But the point is, like, when they try to build these kind of systems themselves, it's such a fucking mess. It takes tens of billions of dollars and it's 20 years late and it doesn't do what it's supposed to and so on. With one of the benefits of Web3, I think, is that we've got now this digital infrastructure that's being built for digital property and digital ownership. And the governments can now, instead of rebuilding, reinventing the wheel all the time in an inferior way, they can just use that infrastructure to distribute property that they recognize. I think that makes a lot of sense. And that's going to save a lot of money. It's not going to be a good get-rich-quick opportunity for people in the NFT space right now, but it's going to change the world.
I have so many use cases in my head.
I have a video coming up about 10 future use cases of NFTs.
Do we have energy market on the list?
I didn't have energy markets, but I had traceability of products, which is connected, somewhat connected to energy.
Yeah, so I'm working for an energy company and we are trading energy on some kind of stock market and could remove everything, all companies in between the customer and the producing party. And you could just put all the information on the blockchain. Windmill is producing energy, creates a block on a chain, and the consumer can then consume energy and has to buy a block from the blockchain again. The government has still the power to check regularly that they are not cheating, that they are not producing more tokens on the blockchain than they actually are producing. This is something I'm really looking forward
to. That's not on my list, but as I said, I had traceability. I think one of the barriers in terms of climate change, one of the barriers to changing consumer behavior is that it's really hard to know what the ecological impact of the things you're buying is. Traceability is non-existent. I guess some of them say they're green, but what the hell does that mean? And with NFTs, I think it can help create an infrastructure where each item can be traced all the way from wherever it's first extracted from the earth to the point where it arrives at the customer. That would be fiendishly complicated to build without a kind of decentralized infrastructure for storing that. With NFTs, I think at some point it will happen, or at least it can happen. Some products will start doing that, and then other products eventually will get there, unless we decide that it's not valuable as a society. But right now, it would help inform consumer behavior. People will be able to know, oh, actually, when I'm buying these tomatoes, their carbon cost is 15 times the cost of these other tomatoes on the left. I'm going to get the tomatoes on the left because they're less bad for the environment. Right now, we can't tell that because it's just two bags of tomatoes.
Yeah, I think this reminds me of a tweet that you recently reposted, by the way, from a year ago, where you pointed out how NFTs can be used for everything. And there's so many use cases that we don't think about because they're not already done in this space. So everything else that happens going forward is going to be the interesting part.
Yeah.
Will you marry me? Please sign up a transaction.
Taking marriage as a process in the UK actually is ridiculously simple. I got married to a Polish woman. We ended up doing the religious marriage in Poland and the civil marriage in Switzerland. But first, we explored doing the civil marriage in Poland. And bloody hell, that was complicated. The amount of documentation that they wanted, the amount of paperwork and stuff like that. And also just the fact that I think maybe because it's an ex-communist state, whenever you're interacting with the state there, they make you feel like you're nothing. And I was like, I don't want to participate in this. Let's have a look at Switzerland. And Switzerland still had quite a lot of paperwork, but at least they were very friendly about it. There was an office that we walked in. It was open for 2 hours every day. We walked in. There were two women there who were super friendly and cheerful. Oh, you're getting married. It's amazing. Like, great. Blah, blah, blah. They were really supportive in how to gather documents. But there was still a lot of documentation. We had to get a notarized proof of something or other from the UK and like just a bunch of things like that. Notarized proof of address, I think it was. In the UK, it was funny. By contrast, to get married in the UK, you just need a passport and a utility bill from both parties, and that's it. That was quite a contrast. Putting that on the blockchain, like via NFTs, might make that process a lot simpler. Like, I just point the NFT to my wallet, it would maybe automatically pick up the identification documents that it needs.
It's even complicated to get a birth certificate for a baby in Germany. You need papers a lot. It's like, the baby's already there. Could you please certify that it's here? No, we need papers from the parents and I really married. What's your church status? We have to print this on the paper too. Please give me a paper. The baby is already minted.
Poland wanted my original birth certificate and they didn't want a copy of my original birth certificate. In order to get married in Poland, they wanted to keep and hold my original birth certificate. Of which there's only one copy, and I was born in Romania, so it's not exactly easy to get a copy of that. No, I'm not giving you my original birth certificate just to get married in your country that I don't live in. Like, what, are you insane? But that was a requirement. It was non-negotiable. It was amazing.
That's very similar to my country. We like to do paperwork.
This might put a lot of people out of work there. I have to find other things for them to do. Maybe play around with Reddit avatars.
Yes. Yeah, always try to remember when there's fear about people getting replaced by better tech. Then the story should be that people get more interesting things to do because of tech. And disclaimer, I work in tech. I face this kind of way of thinking sometimes that, oh, the new AI is going to replace all of us. And no, that's not how it works. We are up on the hour, and thanks for coming on, Daniel. It's been a really great conversation. Welcome. Thank you so much, and it's been really great. And have a great evening, everyone.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Take care. Good evening. Bye.
Bye-bye.